Next on Community Matters, legislative update from Representative Sarah Leitner as the budget season starts getting underway.
We are asking the people of the state of Michigan to tighten their belt by the policies that are being passed out of this legislature.
And she's working to make those who push fentanyl face stiffer penalties.
We need to let fentanyl dealers know that we are serious about these drugs and anything laced with fentanyl.
A special free Earth Day recycling event is coming up on Monday.
We're taking some items that are very hard to get rid of.
That includes things like household hazardous waste items and old electronics like VCRs.
This is a good chance to get rid of all of those electronics for free.
Community Matters coming up for April 20th, 2024. Made possible by Lakeview Ford Lincoln. I'm Richard Pyatt. Welcome. Community Matters, made possible by Lakeview Ford Lincoln, Saturdays after the 8 o'clock news on WBCK, or any old time at battlecreekpodcast.com. Brand new website there, lots of Calhoun County-centric info. So if you haven't been there lately, check it out, battlecreekpodcast.com. I'm Richard Pyatt, joined now by Representative Sarah Leitner.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you. It's been a little while since we've chatted, and all of a sudden it's springtime, which means budget preparations, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's springtime. We're starting to kick out budgets this week, next week, the week after. Going to be going to the full floor. So it's a time of great anticipation right now. It's like Christmas almost. We're seeing what's in these budgets.
We have to have a budget long before Christmas, don't we?
Yeah.
What do you anticipate with this? Because, you know, if we go back 20 years or so, we would practically shut down the government haggling over the budgets. We don't seem to do that anymore.
Yeah. I mean, there's the date out there of July 1st. You know, we're looking at obviously kicking out individual budgets. And then, you know how this works. We do individual budgets. We get a little more serious on negotiations. It ends up falling into two bills. So like we call one a school bus, one the omnibus. Mm-hmm. I don't want people to get too bent out of shape or too tied to one of the budgets that are, being kicked out right now, because we still have that May 17th crack. So, you know, we kind of know where revenues are right now. We're seeing a decline even more. I anticipate actually being under the governor's recommendation when it's said and done in May. So, like I said, May 17th is kind of like the final consensus revenue estimating conference where we, you know, have the best picture of the next fiscal year. After that, that's when you see the more immediate negotiations and actual budget, the actual mm-hmm. final product will be after
right.
that.
Yeah, it goes in phases, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And this is the early going. Now, you mentioned revenues you anticipate will be down again. What kind of pressure does this put on this write-off?
Well, number one, all the money was spent last year, pretty much. So we came into the term with almost $9 billion in money sitting in state government and general fund, that all went away. So, you know, when you have all kinds of money, everybody wants money and you're like trying to disperse it. When money's tight, it's easier to say no,
mm-hmm.
Quite frankly. And, you know, we're looking at tightening the belt, at least, you know, my caucus, my perspective, tightening the belt, because we are asking the people of the state of Michigan to tighten their belt by the policies that are being passed out of this legislature. We'll see that we hit a rollback for the income tax. You know, and I talked about this last time I talked to you, that was supposed to be in perpetuity. If you hit that trigger, then that rollback to your personal income tax stayed the same, 4.05 mm-hmm. from 4.25. Well, there's been litigation in regards to that. So people are paying more in taxes. So in order for this budget to balance, which we are required by statute to have a balanced budget, so yeah. That's a requirement of the appropriations, the governor has to implement the tax increase back to 4.25. And you'll see there's some additional fees. But again, like I said, you know, we're just getting the budgets out, individual budgets, reviewing them, and we're going to have very serious conversations and see where we can end up.
This is the challenge, right? When we talk about tax rollbacks, you got to figure out how to get that money some other way. And that may be a belt tightening, as you talked about, but if it can't be, then it becomes a little bit more challenging, doesn't it?
Right. And there is a challenge. And, you know, we talked about this a long time ago. We still want to invest in things. We have to invest in education in our state to be productive and competitive. We have to invest in our infrastructure above and below ground. You know, everybody wants their roads and bridges fixed. We've appropriated a ton of money for that. We want to continue to prioritize it because it wasn't a priority for so long. So we're going to have to look at different ways to fund those things. And, you know, people talk about the electric vehicles and, you know, what we do there. We've had discussions in regards to toll roads. It might be have to be a thing, you know, miles traveled. I don't know. But anyways, you know, when we're looking at those state budgets, those are definitely priorities. Also, continuing to pay down debt. So, you know, in some of this reshuffle of dollars, you know, the governor proposed basically taking from MIPSRS and funding a new Department of Education of sorts. I am not a fan of that. I am not going to take from the teacher's pension. We just got to a point where the OPEB part was paid off. And we need to continue making that payment and continue paying down those liabilities because those liabilities still exist. It's not 100% funded. So why would we take a little over $500 million from them and spend it somewhere else? Like, that's just silly. So I wouldn't do that in my own budget. So I'm not going to vote to do it in this one.
You mentioned toll roads. I saw some more reporting about that. It hasn't come up all that recently, but it did pop up again. Sounds like you're open to that idea.
Well, it's just one of those things, you know, that everyone is exploring. I mean, you have to do something, whether it be that or putting, you know, some type of technology on your car and charging you for miles traveled, because those cars, you know, with the battery operated cars are very heavy. And if something were to happen, you know, God forbid it catches on fire, like sometimes that destroys the road. So there has to be something that's equitable because clearly registrations aren't cutting it. You know, maybe it could take a shift of the gas tax, like actually having the gas tax go to roads, not this and that and other things. So, I think there's lots of ideas out there. I'm not married to any of them yet. We have to do something. We have to prioritize it, pay the additional money. Because the same mile of road costs, you know, over double what it did even 2 years ago. So, you know, we're in a pickle. The same amount of money doesn't cover the same, you know, the number of miles of road that we thought it would.
And the gas tax issue, if more of us do end up driving EVs, then that reduces the revenue coming from that. I've heard some discussions about trying to find alternatives to that. But there is a perception, isn't there, that you go down to the Indiana toll road, or you go out to the Pennsylvania Turnpike or something, Ohio Turnpike, and you say, man, those roads are nice and smooth.
Yeah.
There's a perception that that helps, isn't there?
Yeah. So, you know, our transportation people will vet that, continue to vet that, and, you know, so see what we can do.
Well, it'll be interesting, of course, to see how this shakes out. But yes, you mentioned the July 1 deadline for budgets, and that seems to do it for us. And we get there one way or another. And so we expect that to happen. And I'm sure we'll hear more from you on the progress of that as time goes on. You have also been seeking input about the solar siting laws that have been passed.
Sure.
You had some public input sessions in March. I'm curious what you heard.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of what we heard is, you know, what I've been saying. I served as a county commissioner, not a township elected, but a county commissioner. And, you know, what I always say when we're talking about townships and zoning boards is those are the closest to the people.
Yeah.
They're closest to our activities that happen in our communities. They know what's going on. They're responsible for, you know, helping with the zoning and planning for that community. And when you take that feature, I'm going to call away from them, you know, you lose that. And, you know, we did hear a lot of argument on, because this was strictly a partisan issue. Yeah. It was complete party lines voting. And at the time, the Democrats did have 56 members, so it did pass, the solar siting. And, you know, what we heard from the other side is, well, the locals do have control. Well, that's disingenuous because they don't. The only way they have local control is if they say yes to a project. If they say no to a project that, you know, the state wants, there's a system basically for that entity to come to the state and then the state makes the decision. Mm-hmm. So really, there isn't local control. That's crap. It just is what it is. And, you know, I know that there's the people are petitioning that to overturn that because, again, what I've told lots of people is they're like, how could you let this happen? And I'm like, listen, number one, I did not vote for that. I come from local government as well. I believe in local government. Again, they're closest to the people. They have the best idea of what should be in that community and what shouldn't. And I said, and then elections have consequences.
So, you know, I've talked a little bit with Marshall, for example, where they're contemplating a solar field of their own, not the private ones that have already been established. And certainly there was some talk about the expectations out there for renewable energy among municipalities and the way that's set up. Are these connected, do you suppose? That is to say, if the state has a target to be a certain amount renewable energy by a certain time, there are concerns that that wouldn't happen without this kind of state involvement. I'm trying to play devil's advocate here and understand.
So here's the deal. Yeah. Our renewable energy policy is very, very aggressive. It's probably the most aggressive in the country, even more so than California. Mm-hmm. Now, when you talk to people about energy issues, generally, they don't get into the nitty gritty about zoning and this and that or whatever. They're just like, sure, when I go to my house and I turn my light switch on, I want to make sure it turns on. When right. I push my garage door button, I want it to go up. You know what I mean?
Or
that's,
down.
That's the big thing. Yeah, up or yeah. down, right? I want my power. I want reliability and consistency.
Makes sense.
Now, and you look at the areas that have those super duper aggressive policies, you know, they have brownouts. They're without power. It impacts the system significantly. And it's significantly more money. Like, it is very disingenuous when they say it's cheaper. Because it's not overall. My own aunt put in solar panels at her house and, you know, for a set number of dollars. And it is going to be years and years and years before it even pays for itself. And likely she's going to have to replace her panels before it pays for itself. You know, so it just depends on what it is. Is there a way to do it and be cognizant of the environmental issues? Yeah, I believe there is. Now, the thing is, I would like to see a little bit tougher would be like when you talk about the different land, like use those brownfield sites. I don't know why we're not using them. Use existing barn, roof space. And they say, well, it's more expensive to go up. And I'm like, well, I get that, but we cannot renew farmland very easily. And we don't even know what the repercussions of having these solar fields on for 20 to 30 years is going to do to that soil. And even when they take it off, the remediation plan is going to take years. And if you're like us, we do no-till and we do crop rotations and we use regenerative ag practices. We also use plants to feed the soil. So we do cover crops, you know, to feed the soil. It will take years to feed that soil again. And what are you going to do when you have all these people and we need to feed the people of America?
So where do we stand? Do you see some kind of movement in the current session that would push against this in some way?
We've obviously on our side of the aisle, there is a desire to make some changes, put some guardrails on it. You know, because one of the things we've seen even during COVID is our departments aren't super reliable when you want to let them mitigate those rules or, you know, whatever. And to give the zoning authority to a state department, who knows where that person's from? You know, they're not going to understand the community and the surroundings. So I think it needs to continue to be local. I think that the people will stand, they'll get their initiative passed to overturn this or change it. So we'll just see how it goes. But as far as legislative votes, we're in the minority, you know, and we've tried, but it's been a very difficult task. So
I saw that some county commissions have been passing resolutions against it. It's not anything that has an effect, legally speaking, but it's an official way to take a stance on it. Would you suggest the Calhoun County Board do that?
Lots of counties have done it, and a lot of entities and even different townships can do these resolutions as well. But I think it's incumbent on the people that are serving in office too to educate the public. You know, we're trying to do the best we can, but educating them and, you know, having them do this, signing these petitions to roll these policies back, because they're not going to be reliable. They're going to be way more expensive. People are already paying more money for everything, and you're asking them to pay more. It's silly.
We've had several conversations about opioid overdoses, other kinds of overdoses, the significance of that problem, particularly in Calhoun County, but all over the place, all over the country, sure. Really. You were involved in a hearing that focused on fentanyl. Now, if you've been following this issue, you understand that fentanyl is often used as an additive in opioids and other drugs to try and enhance it. It tends, for some, to be fatal. And so you focused on fentanyl as part of a hearing that you participated in, did you not?
Yeah, so I actually picked up a package that former Representative Julie Alexander has been working on in regards to fentanyl penalties. So, you know, fentanyl, it's a very uncommon for fentanyl by itself to be dealt, right? But what we're having and what we're seeing in our communities is these fentanyl dealers are lacing other drugs with that. Yeah. And it literally only takes a few grains of fentanyl to overdose. And they're putting it on marijuana. They might have cocaine, heroin. And then, of course, you know, these people are dying and they're like, oh my gosh, you know, how did they overdose on that heroin? They've been doing that many, you know, that hit amount of that hit for a while. And then it's like one time they got something else. And so what we're seeing is fentanyl dealers are the problem. So the people that are lacing these drugs with fentanyl. So right now, so what we did is we proposed an increase in that penalty. So those, any of those drugs that are laced with fentanyl in the delivery, manufacture, you know, of fentanyl related products will be life sentences, because the push for that is they know a lot of those fentanyl dealers clearly are not, they don't actually do the drugs. They just clearly sell it for the mighty dollar. Other products can be more powerful with this little bit of fentanyl on it for a little bit of money, and then they can make a lot of extra money. And they're literally killing people. It's deliberate. It is murder. It's no different than murder one. You know the consequences of lacing products with fentanyl, and you need to pay the price for that. And so that's our... that's the basis of that legislation. It also makes it so people who have those charges in regards to fentanyl are not eligible for treatment courts. Because what we've seen is some of these things with the whole substance abuse drug treatment court is if it's a heroin product, whatever, you know, they're like, we should make them eligible for treatment court. Well, the thing is, the drug dealers don't care. They're not doing the drugs. They'll just go to prison for a year or two. It's not a big deal. It's the cost of doing business. And then they can get right back out there and make tons of money. So by increasing these penalties, we're hoping that they take it more serious. We actually follow through with the penalties. My prosecutor came and testified in support from Jackson County. I had a couple of families who have dealt with this. Mike Hurst, who has started Andy's Angels, Andy's Place in Jackson, which is a substance abuse recovery place. So once you've went through recovery court, you can get housing. It has peer recovery. You know, there's all these things. He has a heart for these people because there is redemption, but you need longevity to stay away. But yeah, we just really need to focus in on these dealers. And, you know, we're increasing penalties for all kinds of other things. And, you know, I don't know how serious they are, but I'm just, you know, why are we not increasing penalties for these murders? Because that's clearly what they are.
Yeah, this seems to focus on the notion that a life sentence could be a deterrent. That is to say, turning up the heat penalty-wise, the threat of it would help someone maybe dealing fentanyl think.
Yeah, twice. And this is legislation that last term it passed the House with overwhelming support. Over 100 votes out of the 110 of us voted for it. I think it was 104. And then it went to the Senate, went through Senate committee. And these poor families are continuing to have to come before us and tell their story of why this is needed. And so I really, really want to get this done. This is a people issue, not a political issue. Probably all of us have been touched in one way or another by heroin, fentanyl, or a derivative of that. And I just don't want these families to come before us and to have to tell their story and go through that emotional grief again, just because people here are playing political games. We need to get this done. We need to let fentanyl dealers know that we are serious about these drugs and anything laced with fentanyl, that we're not going to take it and that you will pay the price for taking somebody else's life.
It, of course, depends on the success of an investigation, a prosecution, and an outcome, legally speaking. It sounds like your prosecutor feels confident that this helps put more teeth in it and that they can work with.
Yeah. Yep, it does.
Where does that stand now? These hearings have gone on, but where do we stand with it at this point?
You had the hearing just before spring break. But right now is kind of all about appropriations. So I'm not sure where the policy committee is going to sit for the next few weeks.
Yeah.
But hopefully before we break for summer, after we get the budget done, like maybe that last couple of weeks. So we'll see. We'll continue to push for that and advocate that we get that across the finish line. Because as you know, being an election year, we're not going to be in Lansing in the summer having committees.
Speaking of that, with sort of an even split now between the parties for the moment, anyway, how has the cooperation been?
Well, it's been interesting. Definitely different than the last two terms I've served here in Lansing. But that's coming to an end here, I guess, after the election's actually certified. We'll see where we land. I'm not sure yet.
Has it been more cooperative between the parties, would you say?
No.
No.
I actually think it's more divisive because it is tied and, you know, but it's a temporary tie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I know there's been a lot of conversations. Now, it did, in some instances, we've been able to come together, but then there's some others that they're just like, no. You know, we had those bills or whatever, and you guys took one. And so now we're not going to share. So we do need to learn to play in the sandbox together for the sake of the people that we represent.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that goes. Hopefully, you know, the budget process, I feel more confident and better about the budget process and the people I'm working with and the players I'm working with for our caucus. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to the next update, and you're welcome back when you're ready.
All right. Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you, Representative Sarah Leichner on Community Matters.